This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For years, they've been anticipating this moment. And the first pitch in Double Ray history will go directly to the Hall of Fame.
Celebrating 25 years of Tampa Bay Rays baseball.
This is the Tampa Bay Rays 25th Anniversary Podcast.
Host Neil Solons will be joined by members of the inaugural Hall of Fame class.
Towards the alley, Crawford going over, makes a headlong dive and a sensational flying catch in the alley for one away.
We'll also honor the greatest teams, players, and moments in franchise history with special guests along the way.
Longoria on the run. He gets there. The Rays are going to the postseason.
Swinging a ground ball to second. This should do it. Aki has it. Takes it to second himself. This improbable season has another chapter to it. The Rays are going to the World Series.
Swinging a fly ball to right field. He's going to get it. Ben Zobrist is there. And Matt Garza has no hit the Detroit Tigers.
It can't happen again, can it?
Swing and a drive. Down the right field line. To the corner. It's gone. Are you kidding me? Dan Johnson with two strikes, two outs in the bottom of the ninth has just hit it out. And the Rays are tied at seven. There's still life.
Here it comes. Swing, a line drive down the left field line towards the corner. This one, it's gone! It's gone! Evan Longoria has just hit the Rays to the American League wild card. All the way to the wall, it's gone! A home run from Mike Brasso and sweet justice in San Diego.
Here's a swing and a drive right center field. Back at it goes, Betts to the wall. Get out of here! It's gone! It's a record-setting ninth home run this postseason for Randy Arozarena.
Swing, line drive, right center. It's a base hit. Kiermaier around third. He scores the tying run. And now they've got a couple to be third and home. The ball gets away. Into score, Arozarena. The Rays have won.
Here's your host, Neil Solons.
Well, thanks so much for being with us. We haven't had a 25th anniversary podcast in a bit. In fact, since probably fairly early in the season, obviously the team on the field has done so well. And we still have kind of been working through some of the changes with our broadcast department. But I thought because this was, in essence, homecoming week for so many former Rays, this was a good time to do one and kind of look back at more of the recent years of our 25th anniversary campaign and some of the more recent successes. So on the podcast today, you're going to hear from Mike Brasso and Willie Adames and Kevin Kiermaier, obviously three players that really touched Rays fans for what they did on the field and the people they were off it as well. Why don't we begin with Mike Brasso? He had what you probably could call one of the best moments in franchise history with the homer he hit in 2020 off Aroldis Chapman. And we started by just welcoming the now Milwaukee Brewer back.
Well, thank you, Neil. Always good to be back.
When you think of your time here, before we get into what I thought was really the most Ray-like moment, what do you think of? What comes to mind?
Yeah, I think, I mean, so many, obviously, memories pop up in your mind when you come back to here. But, yeah, just in general, like that 2020 postseason, 2019 postseason was the first that, first year in the big leagues for me. And then we had a special group there and crazy wild card game there. And then I was lucky enough to, we had the 2020 postseason as well with everything happening in the world that year and kind of have a silver lining, bright spot with the postseason. Yeah, it was just a ton of really good lifelong memories that I got from Tampa.
And obviously, I think Rays fans did too, got some special memories from you. I'm kind of curious now because you're getting used to playing with a pitch clock.
Sure.
How different would that at bat have been, before we talk about the Aroldis Chapman at bat in great detail, how different would it have been if there were a clock for you and maybe for him?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I've never thought about it that way. That's a really good question. It definitely would have had an effect in the at-bat because a lot of, mental, thought process was going on throughout the entire thing. So if I had to cut that down and maybe not have, you know, had so much time in between pitches to kind of analyze things, it might have gone a different way. Yeah, you know. So yeah, I mean, it's something that I'd never thought about until you just brought it up right there. So yeah, good point.
Or it might have gone in his case. I mean, he's taking more time between pitches too. Sometimes I think the clock helps a hitter because sometimes pitchers get worn out a little bit in a long at bat.
Yeah, definitely. That's another good point too. Is, you know, you have that time to kind of regroup, regather a little bit as a pitcher. So yeah, could have gone either way, but you know, luckily we don't have to think about that.
I want to walk through the at bat if you don't mind. Yeah. What do you remember as you were on deck, waiting to hit just in that inning? Do you remember what you were thinking about?
Yeah, I mean, my one to simplify the approach as much as I could. I just remember the high heater. I know that he's got me. You know, previous at bats, I believe the night before I faced him in the ninth, and he struck me out on. You know, I think 100 at the top of the zone. So that's the one pitch where you kind of, you know, go into that bat, figure out the release point, and you know that that's a pitch that probably isn't going to go well in your favor. So try to see the release point low was the initial thought process. So the first pitch, if we get into it right here, was, like I said, we faced him last night. I faced him last night. It was the first time that I've seen him go back-to-back days. So first pitch out of the hand was, you know, try to see release point. Does he still have the velo today? What's he look like back-to-back days? And it just turned out that was probably the best pitch to hit that entire at-bat. But like I said, it was a tracking pitch, kind of see the release point and go from there.
He went 20-some seconds before he threw the next one, and he went top of the zone again.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. And if you kind of look at the facial reaction after I swing at that to make it 0-2, it was kind of one of those things where it was – you know, that's the idea that I didn't want to happen, and unfortunately, I went away from my plan and kind of diverted from the plan a little bit. So that's one of your points was if there was a time clock, I might not have had so much time to kind of regroup and refocus a little bit and kind of lock it back in. But that was the point where, you know, I didn't want to do it initially, but now that I saw where that release point was for that high heater, I know that you know, can't make that mistake again. And then he follows it up with some off speeds after that.
Yeah, were you surprised he went with his off speed away? I think that was one of the few times it was a changeup, or?
Yeah, I think it was that new split that he was kind of working on that year. I think that was the first year that he brought that out. But yeah, I was, you know, taking your homework and previous at bats I've had against him, he always has kind of gone to that. The off speed a little bit later as kind of a wipeout pitch. So not that I was sitting on it, because obviously you have to respect the velo and, you know, the release point, and he releases it so far, you know, his extension's unbelievable. So you had that with the velo. You have no other choice but to be on time for the heater. So you have the off speed in the back of your mind, but you're still on time for the heater.
And then you laid off a high fastball that time to get even.
Right, yeah, and obviously it was a little bit higher, more chest to chin height, but at the same point, like, that is the release, like, out of the hand. That was a easier take just because of where, you know, I had my sight set up.
So you're four pitches in, and now you fight off what looked like a slider on the hands.
Yeah. That's just as simple as, you know, like I said, being on time for the heater. You see the release point down. You recognize that it's an off-speed as it travels closer to you, and you're trying to just react and stay alive at that point. Because that was a 2-2. That was a back foot slider. You're really not going to be doing that much. And when you have to be on time for that heater, yeah, you're just trying to get to the next pitch because you're not going to do much with that.
Do you remember do you think about September at all when you're in the on-deck circle? Is at any point in that bat, does it enter your mind?
Not as far as, like, the storyline, I guess, kind of brings you have that in your head. And obviously, like you said, you remember the moments of when you're facing, you know, different pitchers. Like, you remember kind of – I say it a lot, but I try to do a lot of my homework on how pitchers attacked me previously, what's their out pitch. So, yeah, you remember, you know, kind of what happens in previous at-bats. But you don't take that into the situation. Obviously, a situation like this, you know that, you know, it's going to be two competitors going at each other. So
you fought off 99. He's taking a lot of time between pitches.
Yeah. No, I think it's a pretty lengthy at-bat. I think like 10 pitches or something like that, but definitely more time in between pitches. The shot clock would definitely have, now that you bring that up, the shot clock would have definitely shifted this a bit in one way or the other.
All right, he misses 101 in. Mm-hmm. Did you even have a thought at trying to pull the trigger on that, or you saw it in, or just hoping it's in?
Yeah, I think I saw that one pretty good, honestly. It was, you can kind of go back and forth where, like, some people might say that I kind of got froze there. I don't know, from the left side, as a righty, you kind of see, you know, the trajectory a little bit easier. It's still 101, so it's not like you have too much time to really process it anyway, but I do remember seeing that pitch fairly well, and yeah, luckily it ended up behind, you know, on the, you know, off the plate, like I was hoping it would.
You get from 0-2 to 3-2. What are you trying to do there? Because you just, I mean, you almost hit home run distance on the breaking ball on pitch number 7.
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, the entire at-bat's staying on time for that heater. That's his bread and butter, that pitch right there that you're talking about. That's as simple as being on time with the heater and catching the slider out front. It's just a velo difference there. But at that point, after that kind of happened, I knew the pitchers really don't like seeing long foul balls off certain pitches, so that from here on out it was kind of more of a mental, like, all right, now we're really geared up for the heater, like get your foot down type thing, because he doesn't want to hang that slider again and have the hands get kept in a little bit longer and keep that fair. So from this point on, it was strictly heater in my mind.
So you fouled one straight back. Did you feel at that point I've got him?
Yeah, I think that was the point where I think this is the pitch that he's going to for the rest of that bat. He doesn't want to walk the potential winning run, put him on first base. So I thought this was the point where I was feeling better with the timing with the heater and knew that I was more locked in, not kind of in the middle between his off speeds and heater. And yeah, and kind of just a couple pitches later, I got on time for another one. Yeah.
There's no crowd because it is 2020. Do you remember hearing your dugout as you're, are you floating around the bases? What do you remember?
It felt like there was 50,000 people. I know there wasn't any crowd noise, or, you know, we had the fake crowd noise, but I heard the dugout. Obviously I knew what was waiting for me when I was rounding the bases, as far as, you know, my dugout and the celebration I would kind of be walking back into. But yeah, it was a combination of everything, man. It was every emotion you could possibly feel. It was, it was definitely something that is pretty special. And looking back at the video right now, it kind of brings a smile. So yeah, it's an amazing, amazing, amazing thing that happened. Yeah.
When you reflect on that, was that the best moment that you've had to this point of your big league career?
I think so, man. I think, yeah, that one's gonna be a tough one to beat. Hopefully, there's more chapters written in my book before my career is over, but I think when you kind of funnel everything that happened in that 2020 season and what happened in the world and what happened during, you know, the two teams and, you know, unfortunately, like what happened between the two players, you know, and previously in the season, to funnel it down to, you know, elimination game in a postseason, you know, last inning or eighth inning at bat. That's got, you know, what they say, the storybook writing. So it's going to be a tough one to beat.
When we call it a quintessential Ray moment, because the Rays are constantly seen nationally as the underdog team, and as a guy who was a free agent coming out of college, you were an underdog player, and the moment where the talent just shows and beats the big dog, so to speak. He was the highest paid, one of the highest relief pitchers in the game. Do you see it that way in some ways, that you could understand why it's considered that big a moment for this franchise?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's hard not to see it. And when you put it in that perspective, he's, I think, still to this day, still one of the best closers, best relief pitchers, you know, of all time, honestly. I mean, it's tough to beat a guy like that. When you have, like, what you mentioned, you know, where I came from as a free agent compared to, you know, him having one of the larger, you know, relief pitching contracts of all time, you know, Yankees kind of history compared to the Rays. And yeah, you can see the underdog and, you know, David or Goliath or whatever type, you know, saying you want to throw out there. But I'll take that label with stride. Honestly, I have no problem with that.
Have you ever spoken with him?
I have never spoken. No, we've given each other a mutual head nod, I think. So there's no bad blood. I think when it's all said and done, it's just two competitors that just got caught up and maybe the moment. And like you mentioned, September, early on in the season. And then, you know, when it's all boiled down to the very basics and bolts and nuts of it, it's just that, you know, postseason baseball is unlike any other sport, in my opinion. I think that's what makes baseball best sport in the world. And you just see two mano a mano, pitcher versus hitter, let the best man win.
Well, you did. And we're glad that you had that great moment. And I hope there are many great moments for you going forward. We appreciate some time on our special 25th anniversary podcast.
Thanks, Neil. I appreciate you having me on, man, always.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Really good stuff from Mike Brasso, and really appreciated the time that he took to walk us through that at-bat almost in real time. From the 2020 season with Aroldis Chapman and some interesting answers that he provided on that, and wishing him a lot of success going forward. Now, he obviously is teammates with Willy Adames, who was, I think, one of the leaders of the teams that went to the postseason in 19 and 20 in that World Series year of the pandemic campaign. And obviously, he's been very successful since going to Milwaukee. And I asked Willy Adames what memories flow back when he comes back to Tropicana Field.
Yeah, there's just so many memories and so many like mixed feelings when I come to this place. But I mean, every time I come in, it's like my debut, and like I really don't think about all the baseball memories. It's just like it just feels so good seeing the guys, you know, like everybody, the staff, like the clubhouse staff, the boys, and you know, the coaches, everybody here, even the people that work here in the stadium, they always like, and you know, it's always amazing to come back.
Do you does this feel like home to you in a way?
It does. I think I said that yesterday. Every time, I mean, since we landed here on Wednesday night, it was just that feeling of like, oh my God, I came back home. Like that's how it feels every time I come here. It feels like home.
Who are you still close to?
I think I'm the closest with Margot and Randy and Glasnow. I feel like I talk to them the most of the whole team.
Do you think in Margot's case it was because of the pandemic that brought you so much closer? You had to room with him during that entire time?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we spent those 3 months together doing everything together for, you know, every day for 3 months. And that really brought us, like, super, super close, and you know, he's such a great guy. I mean, he has a beautiful heart, and you know, he's always trying to take care of everybody. So, like, he's, you know, we are like really, really close.
And I would assume with Randy, it was that whole playoff run?
Yes, I mean, it was the same year. I mean, we, you know, when we went to San Diego, we were every day doing everything together, too. So, like, it was just us three going everywhere together.
And Glass? How did the two of you guys connect? Because that's what I thought was so unique about this group, is the pitchers and the position players seem to have that connection too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Glasnow, his personality, I think, is kind of similar to mine. And, you know, off the field, we hang out a lot. Even we went to the Matt Duffy wedding this past offseason, and we saw each other there. And it was like, oh, my God, like, you know, like, what's up, brother? Like, how you feeling? And we kind of connect again. But, like, off the field, we hang out a couple times every time that I'm here, like he's as seen in the off season, so we always stay in touch.
I want to go through a couple big moments with you. First, I watched the Mike Brasso at bat against Chapman with Brass on YouTube, and I see you clapping in the dugout during that. You're right at the top step, and that's what I think of with Willy Adames, even when he's not playing or when he's not in the field or in the batter's box, he's always, you know, supportive. And
I mean, you know, that's the way I am. You know, I always rooting for my teammates. I want them to do great. And with him, he told me that day, he said, hey, you're going to do great. You're going to do something great today. And I was like, no, brother, you're going to do something great today. So for me to see that at bat, and like the way he fought that at bat, and then he came he came up clutch with that homer. So it was just an amazing moment for him and for us as a team. So I was just happy for him.
You had a lot of team moments. Where did that one rank up for you? Because Kevin Cash called it the best moment he'd seen on a baseball field just because of everything that led up to it.
I think it's right there. I think I got to give it like top three, top two. But it's up there for sure.
What are the other ones that stick out for you? Was it the final out of the ALCS to go to the World Series? Was it the Randy Arozarena, Brett Phillips play? What are the moments that stick out then that rank up right there?
I think the out 27 out for to go to the World Series. I think that's the best moment. That's my best memory, you know, because that's the dream come true. So for us to realize that we were going to the World Series, I think that was the best moment. So it ranked right there with Brussels homer.
And to do that without crowd, in that weird environment, Bross told me when he hit the home run, he almost felt like there were 50,000 people there. Did you feel the same way, even though you played without a crowd until the World Series?
Yeah, I mean, those moments, the intensity of those games were like so high that you didn't even realize that you were playing along, you know, just with the other team. So like, and that atmosphere, just like with the intensity of the game, it's like you don't even feel that there's no fans. So like for you, it's just like you're so into the game that you don't realize that there's no fans. So I think he was right.
There are two other moments I want to hit on. The relay in the Houston series here. Can you walk me through that and what that throw and that whole play meant to you?
And I still see it sometimes and, you know, highlights and stuff, and it still like gives me goosebumps. Like it was just... That was one of the best moments that I ever been part of, like one, probably the best play that I've been part of. And, you know, it was just amazing. You know, everything was perfect. You know, Kiermaier throw, the way he was waiting for the ball bounce off the wall. And then he made that perfect throw to me. And then, you know, the tag to Darnold, like it was just like you had to do a perfect play to get a two-way out like that.
And then you brought up your debut, hitting a homer against Chris Sale in your debut game. Can you walk us through what that day was like and what that still memories it still gives you?
Yeah, I mean, that's still unbelievable. That's still an unbelievable feeling. I mean, that day was crazy. And you know everything that happened that day. I mean, I missed the flight. Then my other flight was delayed. Then we had to fly around time, but because there was a storm, I barely made it on time. So like for me, hitting that homer against Chris Sale too, like it was just like I was running the bases and now I was floating. Like I didn't even believe it. You know, I felt like I was in the air, running the bases. So it was just one of the best moments in my entire life.
I think for most people, they'd love to see these two teams meet up in a World Series. What would that mean to you?
I mean, I think it would mean the world. I mean, obviously, sharing the field with my former team and, like, my former teammates, I mean, competing against them, and, you know, seeing Kevin Cash and his staff. I mean, I think it would be a perfect, a scenario for me and, like, I feel like for Brussel too.
And I think the other thing that stands out, do you still follow this group even when you're not playing against them as you did in the series over this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I still talk to Manny a lot and we talk about the team and I told them, you know, that they're killing it this year. So, and obviously, you know, I'm really proud of what they're doing right now and, you know, how the guys are playing. I mean, Randy's playing amazing. Franco's doing amazing. Yandy Diaz doing amazing. So, like, all the boys are, you know, grinding and playing well. And, like, you know, they always try to help each other. So, like, I'm always following and I'm always, you know, I want them to do good.
Well, we're watching and rooting for you to do well, too. Thanks for a few minutes.
Thank you, Neil. Thank you for having me.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Always great to chat with Willie Adames. Certainly a joy to speak with, and wishing him a lot of success going forward. And probably similar to Kevin Kiermaier, who was a big part of the franchise. Different in that KK was here a bit longer, and his first appearance in the big leagues was for a team that made the playoffs in 2013. So he went from the end of that era, the 08-13 period, to the rebuild, to getting back to the postseason, and certainly was a face of the franchise for several seasons too. And similar to Willie Adames, I asked KK what comes to mind when he comes back to this ballpark.
Definitely, you know, different walking past our home clubhouse and keep going to the visiting side. And I knew when that day came, which, you know, was yesterday for me, it was just one of those things like, man, never. I knew it was going to be different, but once you do it, you're just like, wow, you know, this is weird. I know everything here all too well, you know, a particular way being on the home side over there, wearing the Rays across my chest, and now, you know, knowing the circumstances, it is what it is. And but when I get here, you know, my drive to the field, I've done it so many times, and yesterday I was thrilled to do it again today. You know, I know nothing. This is all I knew for my whole career until this year. So a lot of nostalgia going on, obviously. But I think, you know, just about all the great memories, the great relationships, friendships I've made over here. And I always say, you know, I loved running out of that dugout and taking the field each and every time I was able to throughout my whole career. I got an adrenaline rush like no other. And I loved it. Those are, you know, there's so many things here that I'll never forget, and always cherish, you know, all the opportunities and everything that came my way throughout the whole time.
We had previously on the homestand Willie Adames and Mike Brasso with us. Can you walk us through your perspective of the relay, first of all, since that was as many good defensive plays as you were involved with, that was probably right up there for a lot of reasons.
Yep. Yeah, ALDS, that was game 3 or 4, you know, that was an incredible moment. Remember, Yarbrough's pitching, Yordan Alvarez was the hitter, saw it off the bat, knew I was going to have to play the carom and try to make a throw home, and I remember that ball was just up there forever. It seemed like it took forever to get to me, and I knew when I made a good, strong, accurate throw to Willie, I knew it, his arm was capable of on the last half of that play, and he you know, made one of the best, probably the best throw of his career, I would imagine. I mean, Altuve running, had no room for error whatsoever, couldn't delay any longer. It was just a picture perfect play and a relay that you know, I was very proud of at the time, and still when I see highlights of it, I remember the crowd's reaction. You know, you get a standing ovation from a crowd and a huge play in the playoffs, that's what you play for.
I still remember in that series too, the 3-run homer you hit and how the place exploded.
Yeah, that was incredible. And someone was asking me yesterday, said, "Hey, is this place gets loud?" I said, "Oh yeah, it can get very loud." You know, indoors the sound has nowhere to go. And I remember when I did hit that 3-run homer off Zach Greinke, Game 3, 2019. I had a lot of people tell me that was one of the loudest moments they've ever heard here in this building, if not the loudest. And certainly just to be in that conversation to, you know, me, how much I love this organization. I'm proud to be a part of those moments. And, you know, had plenty like that throughout my whole career. And anytime you could, you know, I love displaying my talents for fans, players, whoever wants to see. I just always try to go out there and you know, make some exciting plays, and that's what I love to do, and fortunately was able to be, you know, part of many over the years.
And enjoy the plays of others, too. Of course. 2020, there were no fans, but the Mike Brasso moment, what do you remember about your perspective where you were watching it with no fans and the intensity of that moment?
Best moment of my career, not even close. I mean, I can't even go with any personal accolade I've ever receive. That takes the cake. Brasso hitting that homer off Chapman in San Diego in the eighth inning. Nothing like it, man. I mean, that was incredible. Just a moment of adrenaline that was just unmatched excitement. You know, given the circumstances of the history we had with them, especially at that time, and I'm okay with that. You know, you'd think like it'd be a moment of mine. No, I always said I live vicariously through my teammates so many times throughout my whole career, and that certainly that was the moment that took the cake. And you know, I hope maybe one day we can top that moment, but it's going to be tough. I mean, that was truly incredible with no fans. I mean, that whole COVID year, that just lets you, like, you go, like, it showed the people. You go out for the love of the game. Yeah, you know, we're playing in front of no one, but you still got to go up and show up to play. And that was some of the most fun I've ever had playing baseball during the COVID season.
Andy and I have talked about that being almost like the quintessential Ray moment. Yep. Because it was an underdog moment.
Yep.
Just like you're a 31st round pick. Mm-hmm. He's a non-drafted free agent. Chapman is the big name closer with the big money contract. Yep. And to beat that kind of team, as much as you guys were really, really talented, it kind of resonates for that reason.
Yep. And I said for so many years, I said, look, we don't have a whole lot of household names on our team, and I'm not that's not disrespecting you. It's just we're a small market team. We always have been, and you know, foreseeable future, I don't think anything will change. But I said at the same time, you know, these no household names, like, we have a ton of quality above average players that not a whole lot of people know about, but they will soon know about them before too long. And we just tried to instill the message each and every day, fellas, let's come in the field, let's root for each other, do whatever we can to win. And that's what I always tried to explain to the guys. And you know, we won at a very good pace ever since, like, especially 2018 90 wins and 2019 96 wins, and you know, the seasons after that were incredible to be a part of. So I'm proud of what we created over the years, and certainly, you know, they're off to a great start again this year, and I'm happy for them. You know, they deserve it, and a ton of good players are there, great coaching staff, and always, you know, even from the outside looking in now, I hope the winning way is always there to stay, because I will love this organization, each and every one over there, forever. I mean, they gave me the world, and how could I not, you know, always have love for everyone over here.
You were the one guy who was there at the end of the Madden era, meaning the 13, the last playoff team there, and got to see the next era, in essence, under Kevin. Did that make you appreciate everything that more when your first step into the big leagues is basically in a postseason, and then you had to work to get back there for a few years?
Oh, man, they created a monster. Me, my first 2 days in the big leagues, popping champagne. I am so – that is one of the biggest blessings I've had in my career. I got a taste of that right away and in the big leagues. And that set the bar so high for me. So for me, not going to the playoffs from 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, it was too long to wait. And, you know, finally we got our foot in the door in 19 and you know, got our confidence going. Like I said, the following seasons after that, we all made the playoffs as well. And that's what you play for. We're all trying to go make a living and put a great product on the field, but you play for October and to hopefully advance as far as you can and pop champagne as many times along the way. That's what I play for, and you know, like I said, that's the message I always display to the guys. And when we get to the playoffs and you have those moments, fellas, this is why we do what we do in the off season, spring training, grind through this long season for this moment right here to thrive in the playoffs when the lights are the brightest. This is what it's all about.
Well, you grew up so much in this organization, from a single guy to a married man to a family. Where did you grow the most as a person, do you think? Forget the baseball.
I came here as my rookie year, 2014, as a 24-year-old, just trying to figure out where my life was going to go with baseball. And I said, I'm not going to fall in love. I'm not going to commit to anyone until I become an established everyday player in the big leagues. And I wasn't going to let anyone tell me that I wasn't going to do that. That's what I worked for each and every day. And then, you know, year or so later, 2015, came across this beautiful, beautiful girl who changed my life, changed everything about me. And you know, that girl is my wife, who's the mother of my kids. And you know, one of the best things that's ever happened to me. So I look back, you know, 2014, young, single, Kevin Keir, only worrying about myself. And then coming back here as a 33-year-old, I got a family now, well into my major league career. Don't know how much I have to go, but I come back here and I just can't think of, you know, what a fun ride it's been. I've loved every step of the way, all the good moments, the bad moments. I've, you know, just try to sustain throughout. The Rays, they gave me the world. I so many times can't believe my life is what it is, but I like to think I, you know, create a lot of opportunities for myself and take advantage of them as well. That's what life's all about, taking advantage of opportunities. And the Rays gave me a life that I never thought would ever be possible. But I always feel like the luckiest man in the world.
We appreciate all the memories you've given us, and we certainly appreciate your time as well. KK, thanks for a few minutes.
All right. Thank you, Neil.
Really appreciate the time of one Kevin Kiermaier and Mike Brasso and Willie Adames, all for being on the podcast today. And we will have other 25th anniversary podcasts during the course of the season. Certainly hope to have a sit down at some point with the incoming Hall of Fame class members, Wade Boggs and Carl Crawford, and hopefully Fred McGriff at some point this year as he goes into the Baseball Hall of Fame. And we'll have other stuff along the way, too. Thanks so much for listening with us, and we will chat with you soon.